They mocked her. They ruined her business. But even babies can't stop her from ruling the world.
I'll get those babies if it's the last thing I do. With this anti-infantilization death ray, I'll destroy every baby on the planet.
My God, without Sly, how will we stop her this time?
But can an evil villainess like Elena withstand the highly developed skills of a trio of babies?
Say hello to my undeveloped fists.
You came back.
That's right, kid. Even baby prison couldn't keep me away. I'm here to kick some grown-up ass.
Well, a simple numbers analysis suggests we are in need of an army.
I've got you covered. Come on, boys.
We will serve the master.
We will do it.
From the producers of Baby Geniuses and Porkies comes the continuation of an epic saga full of adventure.
You'll have to climb Mount Doom to stop me, babies.
Don't you worry about it, Krabby Pants. I climbed Everest wearing a 4-day-old diaper.
But what will you do about my traps?
That's why we brought our friends.
We will set off the traps. We will do as the master says.
A tale of hope, justice, and revenge.
Hiya!
Ow!
I've got you!
Avenge me!
There's a 43.2% chance I will fail!
That gives me so much hope.
A story for the whole family.
Oh, my God, what's that smell?
Oopsie.
Co-starring Joe Pesci as Robot Baby.
Now that's funny.
What do you mean funny? Funny how? Am I like a clown or something?
He didn't mean you.
You shut your mouth, kid. Do my giant robot legs amuse you? Huh? Huh? Huh?
And Vin Diesel in his last full speaking role before Guardians of the Galaxy.
Who are you?
My name's Phil.
And Dill.
The Rugrat?
Yes, I've come to
stop this mad woman once and for all.
What happened to you?
We conjoined.
Permanently. Together.
We are more powerful
than you could possibly imagine.
Columbia TriStar Films presents Baby Geniuses, The Last Rugrat, this summer.
Now we fight.
To the death. Beyond death.
Or you could just fight like normal people, you know? How about that?
Danger. The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Cake and grief counseling will be available at the conclusion of the test.
She's alive! Alive!
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Why not just put a stake through her heart?
She's not a vampire.
Well, you'd be surprised how many things that'll kill.
We are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution. At last, we can retire and give up this life of crime.
You and your training wheels.
Hailing frequencies are open.
Hello, sweetie.
Commencing countdown. T-5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show.
A simple number analysis reveals how many movie careers this movie ruined.
I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Julia.
I'm Rachel.
And that has to be the best tagline thus far,
if
Paul.
If only that were true, but no.
Oh, well, what would be the best then?
No, I mean, if only it were true that this actually ruined people's movie careers. It did not.
Well, I mean, Mr. Lloyd hasn't done much.
Kim Cattrall went on to be in Sex and the City.
Yeah, I think she's the exception that makes the rule for this movie. We probably should tell our viewers what movie we've been conscripted to watch this week.
Baby Geniuses. 1999's classic children's movie, Baby Geniuses. Starring a bunch of babies.
So, Sean, is this another movie that you actually loved as a child?
No.
Okay, because I was going to be really worried.
I wasn't a child in 1999.
Yeah, I just have no idea what to expect of your childhood anymore, Sean.
I was literally a child when Mac and Me was out. I was not a child. I had hair on my chest by the time this movie came out.
I think that's a little too much information.
I'm now imagining a terrifying baby with your head and a hairy chest in a diaper. I just want you to know that.
That would fit one of the early scenes where the baby's got a cigar. So,
no, don't go there.
We are talking about the movie Baby Geniuses, which was voted on by listeners, so thank you so much for that. I don't know why we say that, like, sarcastically, because every movie option they have is terrible. If we, like, snuck in one good one and then, like, secretly told them that it was bad, but they picked the bad one, then it would work if we did that sarcastically. But that's not what happens. We do this to ourselves.
Yes,
for their amusement.
We do.
Yeah.
We love you. We love you, old loyal listeners, and we know there are some people who listen to us just for this, so thank you.
It's more accurate to say that Paul loves you. I do not.
Fair enough.
Not after watching this movie. I might have still loved you after Mac and Me, but not anymore.
I feel
like the person that you need to not love is Sean, because he's the one who makes us be on the show.
I don't make you do anything. You are full-grown human beings with agency.
Sean is actually at my house right now holding a gun to my head.
What? What nonsense. Okay, so before we start digging into the movie, we need to get into what we're drinking. So we'll start with you, Paul. What alcoholic beverage are you consuming today?
I'm going with the original beer from the fine folks at the Summit Brewing Company here in the Midwest. I'm drinking a Summit Extra Pale Ale. Actually, several. I've already had one, and I'm working on a second.
Fair enough. What about you, Julia?
I thought, what would be an appropriate alcoholic beverage for a baby? And then I was like, nothing, because babies should never drink alcohol, so I just stuck with red wine.
Okay.
I'm just imagining that conversation. Like, which one alcohol would be all right to give a baby?
Well, because, like, you know, usually I try to do something thematic. There is nothing that you possibly do that would be thematically appropriate for this movie. So, no.
What would be an alcoholic beverage to eulogize the ending of one's film career?
Red wine.
Just like,
yeah.
I feel like red wine is always always good.
It's kind of like a little black dress. It's always good. No, I would actually argue any drink with cream or milk in it might be thematically appropriate.
I thought about that, but I did not want to pollute my Bailey's Irish Cream with the memory of this movie.
A Kahlua mudslide might work.
I'm not going to say what was coming into my head, because
maybe if it had like a 45 Magnum in it, so you could shoot yourself when the movie was done.
But, like, all I'm thinking about is, like, a creamy alcoholic beverage, but consumed out of a baby bottle.
Oh, Sean.
Called a dirty nipple.
Oh, Sean. There's got to be a bar somewhere that does this, though. That's the scary part. Somewhere in the world, I'm sure some bar does this.
Yeah, I'm sure, and it probably goes along with a kink that is not my kink, but it's probably fine for the people who engage in that.
So, yeah, sure. There is actually a drink called a dirty nipple.
Oh.
And it involves Kahlua, Sambuca, and Bailey's Irish Cream. And it's a shot. You layer the shot, and the Bailey's is on top. So it goes Kahlua at the bottom, Sambuca, and then Bailey's. And now you know.
And knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe. In any case, Rachel, what are you drinking tonight?
So I'm drinking a Kraken and Coke, and by accident I picked up Coke Zero instead of regular Coke, and it's interacting strangely with the Kraken, so I would not recommend this. Just admit that you're going to drink and you're going to, you know, take in the calories and just get regular Coke. Trust me. Yeah.
This will, of course, not be the first mistake of your evening.
No, the first mistake was being friends with you.
Oh, wow.
Ouch.
Ouch. I happen to be drinking what I'm now just going to call a bloody apple, which is just a bloody pumpkin minus the pumpkin, because I didn't feel like making the pumpkin part of it. Oh. So it's just apple cider with vodka, but I also threw in a fresh strawberry and a bunch of those sour punch straws.
Oh.
Because why not?
I just wanted to note that the reason I'm having a Kraken and Coke when I normally have like a much better drink that my housemate who went to bartending school mixes for me is because she is currently not here because she is out for her birthday dinner. So happy birthday, Kathy!
Happy birthday, Kathy!
All right, all right. So that's what we're drinking, but now let's talk about the movie. So who would like to tell people what this movie is about?
I got it. I can do it.
Go for it, Rachel.
So this movie is about pain. it's about how Christopher Lloyd has a bunch of babies that he makes wear condom hats, and he's trying to prove that his method of child rearing is superior to the one by the little guy from Ghostbusters 2. And all of the babies have terrible voiceovers, and there's a bunch of like super creepy ass CGI. And eventually the babies, because they are geniuses, like take down the evil organization Baby Co. And then the movie ends, thankfully.
Okay.
I think that, it ends with a montage that takes forever, but I will get into that in my
leave that for the
Hold on.
You left out like all the robotic animals and the giant baby.
Right, right, because the villainess of the movie, Elena, happens to be trying to take over the world through babies.
Yeah, see, I don't know why you keep letting me give these summaries, because I'm so bad at them. But yeah, basically, it's like babies are geniuses, and then when you turn 3 years old, you stop being a genius?
Two. You turn two.
Oh, two. I'm sorry.
No,
two.
It was three. It was three.
Was it three?
Well,
it was two.
The one kid, it said they that crossed over in front of them, they were like, oh, look at that, almost 3 years old, exactly. And then the thing went away.
The change.
But then at the end, when they seemed to cross over, they were like 18 months. So who the fuck knows?
Yeah. Like we expect this to be consistent. It's a movie about babies having the knowledge of the universe until they're 3 years old. And then they just suddenly mysteriously lose it.
Yes. But before they're three, they have the knowledge of the universe and they are really good at karate. And they can kick Christopher Lloyd's butt and escape a prison. And, yeah, basically.
Yes.
That's about as much sense as the plot of the movie makes. It's really,
it's
really bad.
It's a special kind of children's movie. But we'll get into, I guess, some of the more particulars in our likes and dislikes, our 5x5s, as I have not called it in a long time. So, I think given that it's pretty clear that we're all going to not like this movie at all, we'll start with likes and end on dislikes. So, Paul, first like.
Okay, the first like. I like, in theory, the idea of Kathleen Turner and Christopher Lloyd teaming up to be bad guys. That's not something you get to see every day. I mean, Kathleen Turner, I mean, she doesn't have a great singing voice, but she has a great voice, and she has the voice made for a villainess. And Christopher Lloyd, well, I mean, everyone thinks Back to the Future and other goofy roles. To actually see him play a heavy in a movie not called Who Framed Roger Rabbit is actually refreshing for a change. I mean, the execution, however, leaves something
just
to be desired.
Just save that.
Yeah, you know, save that. But the high concept of teaming up to be bad guys, I liked. I know my likes are going to be weak in this movie, Sean.
So basically what you say is your like is the concept they came up with before they wrote the script.
Yes.
Fair enough, Paul. I don't think we need to unpack that one any further.
There are going
to
be a lot of likes like that. Especially I like this. But the fear of it will be my dislike.
All right, Julia, why don't you give us your first like?
So I'm actually going to jump on Paul's bandwagon because the idea of Christopher Lloyd and Kathleen Turner as a crazy villain duo is awesome. And Kathleen Turner does have an amazing villain voice. And that's all I can say about that.
There's not enough fear in the world for this movie.
Okay, all right. I don't think we can't unpack that any further either. So why don't we jump to Rachel?
So I'm going to be on the conceptual bandwagon, but I'm going to have my own wagon, which is conceptually,
I like the fact that babies are giant assholes. Especially because when you think about it, they're like, they're geniuses, but they spend all of their time pooping in their shorts and making people, you know, take it off and dispose of it and clean them. So conceptually, I find the idea that all babies are natively giant fucking assholes very amusing.
They also, I do find it amusing that they use the language element to sort of fuck with people.
Yes.
So like he tells, Wit tells his sister, you know, just say Dada and they'll all flip out and it'll be hilarious. So
yes.
She does. And they all flip out and like, they're just having a blast because they're like fucking with everybody. They really are. They're like sadistic.
They're like little sociopaths.
They're bastards.
Well, especially Sly.
All babies are assholes.
And they have no respect for authority. At all.
Pretty much. So, yeah.
It's just, yeah. That's clearly what this movie is about. It's about, you know, fighting the man.
Or the woman in the case of Kathleen Turner.
Fair enough. Well, I guess that would be my turn then, yes?
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna save the one that Rachel's gonna strangle me to death for, so I'll save that for later. I will just say that Dom DeLuise is in this movie, and it makes me happy because all I could think about while every time he's in it, he's only in it for maybe 5 minutes in the of a whole total screen time. He's not in it very long, but every time he talks, I just kept thinking about An American Tale and Five O Goes West.
Me
and I just
too.
Really wanted to watch those.
Yeah.
Yes, I totally agree. I was like, oh. Cats, but no.
But those movies are great, right?
I certainly enjoyed them as a child. I haven't seen them since I was a child, so I'm hesitant to say they're great because
they're still great.
I have no idea how they hold up, but yes, I really did enjoy them as a child.
Well, we're just gonna have to watch them for the show at some point.
Maybe next year when we do animation for our year
for our theme. We could do something like that, yeah. So I just love Dom DeLuise. I mean, like, he doesn't get to do much in this movie, and I'm not going to pretend that he's, like, good in the movie, but that voice just, like, it brings me joy.
Even when he was talking like a robot?
Yeah, you're talking Spaceballs?
No, I'm talking about when he was being mind-controlled and he...
Oh, right, oh. Because he's in Spaceballs.
We have a very important errand at Baby Co.
Thank you. Yes.
Which is about how people would talk if they were turned into mind-controlled zombies. Yeah. Dude, it's Dom DeLuise. What do you want me to do? He's joy. He's a big ball of joy with a beard. So, let's move on now.
Okay.
First dislike, Paul Co.
Well, I'm gonna play on the one hand and on the other hand. So I like the idea of Kathleen Turner and Christopher Lloyd as a villain duo. However, their execution of the characters. Now, granted, they're written badly. They have no character arcs. They're broad stereotypes, and it almost feels like, I mean. Kathleen Turner isn't quite phoning it in, but it feels like for a lot of it, Christopher Lloyd is, and that really is disappointing. I mean, the movie has some gags that they even miss. I mean, Kathleen Turner's character's name is Dr. Kinder, which I thought was cute, but no one ever makes anything of that. I would have thought at least the kids would have made fun of that, because they seem to be so intelligent, but the actual characters themselves... No, they did not cover themselves with glory in this movie whatsoever. And Christopher Lloyd looks like a buffoon, and Kathleen Turner tries kind of, sort of, but no. They've done much better work before.
Well, of course they have. It's fucking Christopher Lloyd. I mean, he was better in Angels in the Outfield than this.
Yeah, I think I can agree with you on that, and that's not exactly a highlight of his movie career. He was better at Interstate 60, which is a movie 8 people have seen besides me.
But you're right. I mean, this movie sets itself up for failure in the very first scene when all of this maximum security research underground research facility, like some shit out of Resident Evil, right? And the baby has disappeared somehow. I don't know how a baby disappears, but whatever. It's a super genius baby. And all of the guys are running around like buffoons, like bumping into each other like characters out of like Super Mario.
Yeah, it's a very Keystone Cops sort of opening to the movie.
So I mean, it sets itself for that failure at the moment it starts. We realize this is going to be absurd.
Yeah.
So, and then of course we get to watch. Well, maybe I shouldn't mention what the baby does when it gets above ground, but
yeah, we should say that.
So, Julia, what about you? Your first like, your dislike?
So you're kind of following on the same thing, but I'm going to pick on Kathleen Turner because I agree about Christopher Lloyd. I mean, the only time that he's ever been worse in a movie is in Back to the Future.
Hey.
Wait, what?
I'm just kidding. I was waiting for the outrage. It took a second because you were all like, what?
I was getting my drink, so my mic was muted, but I was going to scream.
No, I think we can all agree that Christopher Lloyd is great in Back to the Future, and this movie is terrible. But Kathleen
There's
Turner...
There's nerd rage so far. Like, the whole nerd kingdom, like
I would ever actually say that for real.
Oh, so you're just a troll.
I was totally saying it to troll you guys, and I can't believe you actually... I did not expect you to really fall for it. I can't believe you all actually were angry. But anyway... No, Christopher Lloyd was great in Back to the Future. He was terrible in this movie. He is totally phoning it in. He looks like he's actually embarrassed to be on the screen half the time. And then, like, Kathleen Turner is actually trying a decent portion of the time and having fun with her villain voice, which is great, except that it still sucks. And then there are times when she just, like, does give up. So there's, like, one point where they rip Maleficent's lines from Sleeping Beauty directly, where she just starts calling her little minions idiots and imbeciles, which is one of the great moments in Sleeping Beauty when Maleficent just gets outraged because she sends all of her minions out to look for a little baby Aurora who is 16 now, and they all come back and they're like, we searched every cradle in the land, and she's like, cradle? You were looking for a baby? Idiots! Imbeciles! And she just like goes to town chewing them out. Well, Kathleen Turner has that exact freakout moment when, like, she realizes that they've switched Wit and Sylvester at the mall. And she's like, idiots, imbeciles, you idiots, yeah. Imbeciles. I'm going to say it again. Okay.
I kept thinking of her being kind of like a poor man's Cruella de Vil.
Well, like, Maleficent is not unsimilar to Cruella de Vil in that respect as well, like as far as being kind of horrifying female Disney villains with exciting voices. But the idiots imbeciles thing is directly Maleficent's line. But like halfway through it, it's like Kathleen Turner realizes what she's invoking and what she's doing. And the disconnect is so great that she's just like, I can't go on. And she just kind of slumps. Because
she gives
she's
up.
Just it's just such a terrible movie. I feel bad.
It's not good at all. I mean, it's like the premise could have been okay. I mean, I don't think anything they could have done would have made this better than good. Like, they would never have been a great movie, but it could have been like, you know, a mildly entertaining movie that children will remember when they grow up as adults.
Yet apparently it was successful enough that they made a sequel, and now there's a series.
Well, they made a shit ton of Air Bud movies, too.
Yeah. But the fact that this movie made enough money to merit sequels, yeah, I might have to leave that as a dislike on its own.
Decay of Western society.
Just remember, the movie series you could have got was the Tony Danza and the football-kicking donkey movie.
I'm what? Sorry, what?
Wait, what? What?
So when I was not quite a kid, I believe it was Tony Danza was in a movie with with a donkey that could kick a football. And of course, as all football movies or sports movies which involve animals playing in what are traditionally human parts, there's always that loophole that says, well, it doesn't say that an animal can't play the role. So of course, what ends up happening is he ends up with a kicking donkey. It's also possible that I am mixing two movies, Tony Danza kicking a football and a donkey kicking a football, into the same movie. But I'm pretty sure if I look up Tony Danza, donkey.
You're mixing up movies. Tony Danza wasn't in that movie. You're thinking of the movie Gus.
Is it Gus?
Gus, 1976. It's a Walt Disney movie back when Walt Disney was doing live action movies and not doing them very well, and it was basically about a California team that's so desperate that they get a football. It's not a donkey, it's a mule. They get a football kicking mule.
Oh, I'm sorry. Semantics. Mule, donkey. But I think they remade it, like as a TV movie.
Nah, I can't imagine they did that. I mean lots of those Disney movies wound up on TV a lot. But yeah, I remember this thing. But I misremembered it apparently because they say it's the California Adams, and I kind of remembered it as a New York Jets ripoff team. But they say it's a California team. But maybe that's my Jets pity coming through again.
But Tony Danza was in a football movie, wasn't he? Am I thinking someone else? Gosh, because like just the idea of Tony Danza.
I know Keanu Reeves was in a football movie, but that's a different thing. Al Pacino was in a football movie. Burt Reynolds was in a football movie.
Is this football or soccer?
Maybe it was soccer.
So like Gus has Don Knotts and does have a donkey. I don't know if Tony Danza was in a soccer movie or not. Will Ferrell was in a soccer movie, and Rodney Dangerfield was in a soccer movie.
Oh my God!
I found
garbage picking, field goal kicking, Philadelphia phenomenon. So I was mixing two movies. Tony Danza was in a 1998 television movie for Walt Disney Pictures about a guy who was just really good. It was a garbage man who turned out to be really good at kicking balls.
But no
footballs.
What movie was this?
It's called The Garbage Picking, Field Goal Kicking, Philadelphia Phenomenon.
Okay, I thought that was a tagline. That's the actual title.
That's the actual title.
And it was a
starring
movie.
Tony Danza.
Wow. And Tony, so you say he's really Danza. Good at kicking balls, so he's basically Sly grown up?
Yeah. Yeah. Only these balls are metaphorical balls.
I'm just getting us back on topic.
I know. But so I was merging Gus and Tony Danza because honestly, those two should have made that should have been the movie they made. Because let's be honest, if you said to somebody, you know, I saw this movie once and it was Tony Danza with a football kicking donkey, you would want to see that. Admit it.
I feel like
you would be so intrigued.
I feel like in the 70s, Don Knotts was a perfectly acceptable choice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that was the 70s. I'm just saying. Anyway, maybe we should not talk about my fantasizing and my bad memory.
It's not too late for you to become a multimillionaire and pay Tony Danza to be in a movie with a donkey and a football.
I would make so much fucking money on that. You know I would.
I'm more concerned by the fact that Sean is fantasizing about donkeys.
Not just about donkeys, Rachel. He also fantasizes about drinks out of babies' bottles.
That's true. And getting his balls kicked.
All of those things are wonderful. On that note, shall we get back on track?
Yes, Julia.
Please. I think we're on Rachel now.
So first dislike is in execution. All of the babies are assholes. It's not the problem is, if they were funny assholes, it would have been a good movie. But they're not. They're just assholes.
They're a little sociopaths.
That's basically my dislike. They're all terrible people, and they're not funny. And they keep trying to be funny, which just makes it worse.
I think we'll be revisiting that in a later dislike of mine.
Oh, yeah.
or right now, because that's something.
No, I have something else. Like,
does it have to do with the baby carriage, Julia?
Oh God! That's one of my.
I have issues with that.
That is part of it. Yes, it will come out. It will come out in a later dislike. It's a separate concrete thing, so I'll save it.
Yeah. So can I talk about any of these things?
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about whatever you want.
I was just going to say that's going to be like an entire dislike that we all just share. I wrote three lines about how much it pissed me off.
Yeah, the baby carriage thing maybe we should save, but you can talk about anything else, Sean.
Paul, is one of your dislikes the baby carriage thing too?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, we're going to save that for the next round because it seems like all of us want to go on a rant.
Perfect.
So I think that's fair. We'll save that for next round. Mine is actually related to yours, Rachel, which is that I didn't understand this movie. Like, so this movie's about babies, right? And I thought that the humor would be like, it would be somewhat baby humor, but maybe like a little bit older. So like, you know, kids who are actually old enough to understand what a movie is would appreciate it. But like the jokes that kept coming out of the movie were at times like adult in a way that was just felt so like just it didn't feel like, oh, it's an adult joke. It felt like dirty jokes. But, like, not in a way that, like, I wanted a toddler to ever utter to me, ever.
So much agreement. So much agreement.
There were just, like, weird things. Like, Sly would say things. Like, he would do this Humphrey Bogart thing. But, and he would, like, say it. It was creepy and weird. And it was just, there were so many jokes that were just, like, what I expected from this movie was, like, honestly, I'm going to get poop jokes. And, like, kids throwing stuff in people's faces, like, maybe a little bit of Home Alone jokes, which we did get a little bit of that. You know, but, like, that kind of stuff, like, jokes that kids would like, not jokes where, like, for some reason, I'm okay if, like, Macaulay Culkin makes a slightly sexual joke because he's, like, 10 years old. For some reason, I'm okay with that. But, like, a fucking baby makes that joke, and I just feel really skeevy. And that's this movie. This movie makes all of these jokes and the way in which Sly talks. He talks as this character that I don't understand why they went with the Humphrey Bogart thing, because that's clearly what they're going for, at least from my mind. They were going for the Humphrey Bogart thing, but like, why? It's not like anyone who was a kid when this movie came out would fucking know who Humphrey Bogart is. So it's just the whole thing was a mess, and I just found the comedy just really just, I felt like dirty watching this movie at sometimes. Just, I felt really weird. Yeah, so that's my dislike. There we go. So Paul, you want to go for a second like?
Do I have to? Yeah, I guess I do.
You do.
I do.
You are contractually obligated.
Okay. Again, this is kind of circling around things that really aren't in the movie. Since the movie is 16 years old, I found some of the anachronisms to be amusing. I mean, they talk about Dennis Rodman, the one character that keeps changing his appearance. They keep making
Dickie
keeps Dickie. Changing. I know, maybe we should talk about Dickie separately, but the movie is very dated, and I was amused by it as being dated. I mean, and the kid goes to Macy's. It's like, who goes to Macy's anymore? And he goes to play video games. It's like, oh boy, video games. Like, he went to Macy's to play video games. Wait a minute. That was back in the 80s, much less the 90s. So I was amused by the out of time, dated feel of the movie. I mean, that amusement park feels very much it feels like the 90s version of the amusement park inside of the Mall of America. It's just very, it's just very much a movie of its time. And I was, I shouldn't say charmed by that, but I just kept picking on all the references. I kept looking at the cars and all the technology. It's like, okay. And just kept looking at it as a period piece. It's just as a way to try to get through this movie alive.
So the amusement park that we're presented, I'm assuming this is not going to be like a specific dislike, but in the movie, Evil Elena, the supposed aunt, I'm sure we'll mention why that supposed is relevant. She opens up a like playground for kids, which I guess has an admission fee for adults. It's not really clear to me how this thing works.
They make it absolutely clear, actually, because I just saw this 2 hours ago. Yes, dear listeners, it's fresh in my brains. Pity me. She specifically says it's free for kids, but adults have to pay.
Right, and that place, by the way, is filmed in Las Vegas. It's actually inside
the Circus Hotel, apparently.
Right.
But it reminded me of the amusement park inside of the Mall of America, which is a similar idea.
I think that's what they were going for, though. I mean, when you think about, you know, amusement park inside of a mall, you think about the Mall of America. You don't really think about Circus, unless you live in
Las Vegas, maybe.
Las Vegas, and
Circus is not a mall. It's a hotel.
Yeah.
But this is, yeah, so that was weird. But yeah, a lot of it is very dated. But no.
But you look at it as a period piece, and then you can enjoy it being dated rather than being upset about it.
Right.
So.
Well, Julia, you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. So this isn't actually my like. I just want to tag on to Paul's that the whole time I watched this, and Moss was in the same room trying not to watch it, but occasionally being like train wreck pulled in anyway.
Moss.
But the whole time we were like, is this actually from 1999 or is it from the mid 80s? Because it seems like a movie from the mid 80s. I don't understand how it's from 1999. So it was very strange. Like, there were things about it that were obviously late 90s. Like, there was a lot of CGI and robotics and stuff, computer stuff that seemed late 90s. But the whole feel of the movie felt very 80s, especially that montage at the end.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That was just baffling to us. It's not a like or a dislike. It's just a note. The next like for me is the first time that Dickie appears when he has his pink hair and his like little stud collar and stuff. I was like, oh, he's a cute little punk kid. So I liked the first frame of him appearing on screen.
Just the first frame.
The first frame.
I feel so bad
before
for Dickie.
Any conversation happened.
Before he opens his mouth, got it.
I enjoyed the appearance of Dickie before any conversation around Dickie's character began.
I'm guessing there's going to be a dislike somewhere in that.
Yeah,
it's heading like a curveball there, Sean. I can see Julius getting ready to crush it.
Okay, well, I will not say anything about that then because, I'm guessing that'll come the next round.
We're all going to go to town on that baby carriage.
That baby carriage. That damn baby carriage.
Yep.
So why don't we jump to you, Rachel, so we can get to that baby carriage even quicker.
Okay.
I'm just going to say baby carriage like that every time now.
Baby carriage. So
baby carriage.
I'm going to go with... I like the condom hats the babies wear.
Condom hats.
And that's it.
That's your like?
I had a really hard time.
You have to dig deep for this movie, Sean. There's not a whole lot there to like.
I'm sorry, but if I tweeted Rachel likes the condom hats, like that would elicit very confused responses.
I fucking dare you do it. If you want, I will tweet it right fucking now.
No. You're not gonna beat me to this shit. I will beat you to it right this second. I'm gonna beat you. I'm probably not because I'm a little drunk.
We shall see.
You still have to tell us your second like, Sean.
I know I do, but I gotta tweet this. Just let me get it out, okay?
Okay, Sean.
I just did it too.
Like, I have this theory that this movie might be way better if it were cast and directed by David Lynch. And like, if you imagine just replacing all of the soundtrack music with like the Twin Peaks theme.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I am looking at two tweets from Rachel and me about the fact she loves condom hats.
All right, I'm forced to log into Twitter now.
Oh, dear God. Oh, God. Viewers, this is what happens when we see an awfully, awfully bad torture cinema movie.
You did this to us.
Yes, you picked this. You picked this movie, viewers. I'm blaming you, and I'm judging you.
Oh my god!
I am still sober, although this is my main will alone at this point.
But Condiment.
They don't wear condom hats. They wear them, and it's so weird. Why? Okay. I gotta get this shit together, because I gotta do
things. You broke Sean first this time, not me.
I win!
You win, Rachel.
I win!
She's won, yeah. So we're on likes, right?
Second like.
Okay,
better than condom hats.
I got nothing better than condom hats. I'm sorry, I really don't.
I won the as I'm going home.
I would just say that Basil has the most insane facial expressions of any baby that I've ever seen.
Poor Basil. I like Basil.
He's such a weird child, though, because like his like all the other kids sort of kind of express, but like his face contorts. Like, he goes from being, like, I'm smiling to, like, I'm fucking Jack Nicholson. And he just does this back and forth, and it's just, like, really just... It was just... Every time he was on screen, I just had to stare at him.
Because
I was wondering what his face would do.
That's because of the CGI, Sean, which we'll talk about in a later dislike.
Wait, do you think the CGI is the one contorting his face?
Yeah. There's a lot of CGI in overlaid over on these babies... Basically having little people do a lot of the acting.
Yeah, so fun fact, this is actually the first film that used CGI specifically to be around people's speech.
Yeah.
That's a really terrible thing for this to be the first to do that.
Well, it shows, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
I'll tell you
does.
What, though, it's still better than a talking cat. Because I'm sorry, if you've seen a talking cat and the way that cat talks, it's much scarier.
Hey, it is on the master list.
I tell you, we need to watch that movie. It's amazing.
Well, you can campaign for it when it shows up in a poll.
Dear listeners, please specially request a talking cat.
Hey, we are not above bribes.
We are totally not above bribes.
I have taken bribes for this podcast before. So if you want to bribe us,
we were corrupt before we had power.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a good time for us to jump to the thing that we all want to rant about.
Oh God, yes.
Oh,
which
buddy.
Is
so
the baby please. Carriage.
So Paul, you get to go first.
Okay,
baby carriage, Paul.
I will describe this scene for the benefit of the viewers who should never ever watch this, but they need to know why we hate this with the passion of a burning supernova. So at one point, Sly is trying to escape from Elena Kinder's minions, and so he gets into an already occupied baby carriage, which has a nice little girl baby in it. Now, this scene goes wrong right away, because he says, I'm going to need you to take off your clothes, is what he says to the girl baby. Girl baby, instead of being offended by this, finally says, at least you could ask me buy me dinner first. So he changes into the girl's baby clothes, and then he escapes out the carriage, leaving the baby girl inside with the boy clothes and with a cigar. And the girl baby says, call me. Now, did not need the idea of the intimation of baby sex inside a movie ever. The cigar alone is the punctuation that, yeah, that's exactly where they're going with that. Like, no, I did not need that mind. I didn't need that in my brain. There's not enough brain bleach in the world for me to get that out of my brain. And this movie put it into my brain. And so I hate this movie for that. Hate. And so the rest of you can dive into this in even more detail. So
let's go to you, Julia.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. It was horrible. It's definitely a case of Sean talking about the toddlers being like overly sexualized in a super gross way. Because Sly is, throughout the movie, this horrible, and this is my actual dislike, is Sly's personality as, like, this hyper-sexualized macho man. Because, like, later he gets out of the pink girl outfit and puts on a tux or something. But what he says is, finally I can get out of this drag. Which, like, he's a baby. Babies don't really care what they wear. They care that it's comfortable. Sometimes they have color preferences. It's not related to what gender they're assigned. Like, I've spent enough time with babies to know. And, yeah. Like, also, just the fact that she asks, you could buy me dinner first. There's later a point where Sly says something to somebody else, and he's like, oh, behave, which is, like, him saying Austin Powers' line. From Austin Powers. And when that happened, I was like, wait, did he just use Austin Powers? Did this come out after Austin Powers? Because, again, it felt like it was from the mid-80s, so I was really confused that this would have been, like, post-Austin Powers, which was 1996 or 7. And then I was like, no, wait, yes, this is from 1999, even though it doesn't feel that way. But also, like, why? Why would you have a baby saying that? Like, Austin Powers is this sex thing, and that's not okay. And it just kept happening over and over and over again. And when he wasn't doing that, he was fixated on kicking people in the balls. And then laughing maniacally, like, all of his character was so creepy. Like, if...
No, we'll save that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's one of my dislikes.
Well, cause I feel like this is actually the rant that I have is about Sly's whole character.
Okay. Can you just save the laughter part though?
Okay. Yeah, sure. So, like, I guess so, but it ties into it. So you don't want to talk.
Just go for it.
You don't
want to
talk
fine.
About
just...
the laughter this round because I was just kind of figuring.
I'll just do it all. I'll just do two at once. It'd be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
Go for it.
Well, will you have a fifth dislike that you can pull out elsewhere?
Oh yeah, I've got like 50 dislikes.
Okay. Because I was just like, no, I just want to. I want to get all my Sly hatred out right now because, like, there's just so much I hate. But yeah, like, there's so much, 30% of the movie probably is him doing something and then laughing maniacally in a way that is just horrifying. And it's like every time that happens, I was hyper aware of how quiet everything else around me was because I thought about how, like, if I was in a theater full of people, the audience would be expected to be laughing, but how I couldn't imagine anyone actually laughing. So I would probably just be in an audience full of people staring awkwardly at the screen and being like, oh God, why are we all in this room together? What have we come to witness?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I just, the cigar stuff, the baby sex, why? Just no, don't ever do that. And all of the sexualized stuff, not okay.
So, Rachel, what did you want to add to that before I add my little bit?
I mean, Paul really kind of covered it well. I mean, okay. Here, I'll just read you what I wrote in my notes, which is a sex joke with babies. Yeah, that's okay. And then just a description of the thing. Like, I mean, it's just so gross. Like, you know, I'm sitting here and just kind of going, like, who the fuck thought this was acceptable? Was the script written by someone with a fetish that needs to go to jail, basically?
Oh, God.
Yeah, because... also, I forgot that when Sly first escapes from Baby Co. and he, like, gets out of the diaper truck in the city, the first thing he says is, where are the chicks?
Yeah, I mean,
oh,
that is...
God, yes!
It's so gross, and it's just, like, projecting this adult male... fantasy onto a baby, which is just disgusting in its own way, and then just making the baby so polarized by gender, which is not a thing that babies really do. Like, I mean, a little later on, like, you know, 3 years old, they start deciding if they want to be princesses or whatever. But even that isn't necessarily controlled by gender. Like, of all the little kids I knew, my little niece loves pink, and the only other kid I know that loves pink as much as Mina does is a little boy. So it's just projecting these adult bullshit constructions onto babies and then trying to make it funny in the least funny way possible. It's just gross and skeevy.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing that I did want to add to this is there is The film tries to create a logic for why this exists, and I'm not suggesting that logic holds. I'm presenting it so that we can tear it to pieces. Because the thing that the film does is it suggests that for the first couple of years of a baby's life, it retains all of the memories of its previous lives, implicating babies as those years as being sort of connected to, you know, life after life after life for, like, you know, basically as long as human beings have been around. So this idea that babies might have the access to the meaning of the universe and all these kinds of questions comes up. It doesn't hold up because mostly it's never really explained in any way that makes sense. But what's I found disturbing about that, to sort of add to what you guys have said, because I agree with everything everyone has said, but what I found disturbing was that when the writers sat down to create this narrative, which is silly, but, like, okay, it could be a little bit fun to have the idea that, like, babies have information from their past lives, but the past lives that were being presented are these extremely gendered, very sexist sort of views that are being reinforced in babies in a way that sort of is contradictory to how, like, anybody understands babies. I mean, I've never met a baby that, like, well, okay, I've never met a baby that talks, for one, so that's obvious. But I've never met a baby that is in, from my perspective, capable of gendered behaviors in this way. And I think that's just because they're fucking babies. They just don't do that. So it seemed to me that so we have this narrative, but then the problem was that the film tries to make these adult jokes, but it fails miserably because the jokes are, they're not the kind of jokes that you would expect maybe in, like, a Pixar film, which does jokes that work as adult jokes because we get the implications behind them that are more adult in nature, but the kids don't because they get a different joke out of it. But these moments that were being presented, they only work in a dirty adult context. They don't really work. Like, there's no way you can have, oh, well, call me, after he has taken this female child baby's clothes and exchanged them, right? There's no way that can be read as, well, that's a funny joke to kids too. No, that's only a sexual joke. There's no other version of that joke that I know of. Is there another version of that joke?
Nope.
It's just a sex joke,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's just a sex joke. And Paul nailed it with the cigar too. Like, he leaves her lying on her back smoking a cigar.
Right, so it's intended from the start to be this overt sexual joke, which I think is meant for the adult audience, which naturally the adults would be the ones taking their kids to the movies. But it doesn't work because it's a joke that only works for adults in the sense that we understand what the joke is. It's not a joke that works for kids. And so in that sense, it completely fails. Because it has to work on two different levels. Pixar jokes always work on two different levels. We'll get those jokes that we get the adult implication, but the kids always get their own version, their own sort of kids version, so that it's not inherently a dirty joke. It just depends on how old you are and how you interpret it. This film at no point does that. It just says this is a dirty joke and babies are doing this and this is supposed to be normal. And of course, what we end up with is all these, like, really disturbing, like, babies reinforcing gendered sexist norms, which I just, like, that scene in particular, like, there's a reason why we focus on that scene, is that scene is, like, just fucked up.
It was so gross. Like,
yeah.
It's just gross. It's skeevy. It's just, that shouldn't be in the film. Why is this here?
Yeah, and I mean, I just do want to call out again all the other times that Sly does stuff that's not okay, because that is, like, the worst, but saying, oh, behave, it was also in a very sexualized context. Where are my chicks? Oh, good, I can finally get out of drag. Like, there just was so much that was – it was just not okay anytime it was suggested.
Even his Humphrey Bogart thing when he talks to – I think it's Carrie is the girl that's his friend that's in the facility. I may be wrong. Maybe it's not Carrie. It's just one of the – I can never remember. There's so many twins in this movie.
I think it's Lexi.
Lexi, yeah. He even says to her, he uses this very patronizing Humphrey Bogart language, like he refers to his kid and you know, those kinds of sort of very patronizing kind of terms. That is being reinforced as well, this kind of behavioral pattern, this language, the linguistic side of it. It's just, it's all throughout.
Yeah, no. They definitely have Lexi set up as a sort of damsel in distress.
Yeah.
All of the babies are pretty non-people.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say they're all of the babies are non-people. I think Sly and Wit have
the female babies.
Oh, the female babies.
Yeah.
Carrie has a little bit more. Like Carrie is the one who actively chooses to stay behind and try to tell Dad what's going on, because she knows that they're going to cross over soon, so she wants to let him know ahead of time. But like Lexi, the conversations that Sly has with Lexi are pretty much, you know, you should come with me, and she's like, I'm too scared.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll take you to a mom. And she's like, no, I can't do it. I'm too scared. Like, basically, I'm too scared to do anything. So, like, you go and be a good man, baby.
Yeah, I was just gonna stay
man, maybe.
Well, we get that narrative. We get that narrative of a sort of a man on his own.
Yep.
Yeah.
With a baby.
And the good looking chick he left behind, but now he's a free man because he's been cut loose, so he can look for chicks in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have baby carriage sex with them.
Oh, God. I think
that's intentional. That's the narrative that they're playing on. They're playing on these very adult narratives that we've sort of come to expect from film, but it's in a film about babies for kids. And it doesn't translate in any context. It just it doesn't work.
I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to say, presumably, all of the gross shit was put in there so that the parents who were dragged to the theater with their children have something to laugh at. But anyone who laughed at that shit should probably be slapped. Or at least looked at in a very, you know, sort of side-eyeing, like, what? Why do you think that kind of gross stuff is funny? And it went away.
Yeah, because, like, the scene with the carriage is...
Stevie.
I found it so disturbing, not just because of the joke that's being presented, but like he just climbs in her carriage, like no big deal, like just random boy climbs in carriage and nobody notices for reasons. And then he's like, well, give me your clothes. It's never a like, you know, let's have a conversation like, dude, I just escaped from this fucking crazy like facility and these people are after me and like I need to disguise myself. Is there any way like we get the that conversation is never had. He just says, give me your clothes. And it's sort of,
and she like, submits to this.
She submits to it for reasons we don't understand, because I don't think we're supposed to. I think she just submits because she submits. And that's again, that's the gendered reinforcement. It's man is manliness, you know, he is Superman as a 3-foot baby, and the women in his life, they just sort of follow him and do what he tells them to do, and that's the fantasy being reinforced. But it's being reinforced with fucking babies. Like, why are we having this? Why do I not just have like baby throwing dirty diapers at people? Like, seriously, that's what I expect from this movie. I expect like poop jokes. And like maybe some like Home Alone kind of stuff, like with like the ski and the guy's balls and like things falling on people's heads and like some slapstick. Not this. This is not what I want out of a movie that involves talking babies.
Word. Like I can't do more than just did to that, Sean.
Yeah, I know. I hated that moment as much as you guys did.
It's so gross.
So should we go to maybe another like?
Third like.
All right, Paul,
okay.
Go for it.
Okay. My third like has to do with the utter insanity of the doll controlling scene at Joy World towards the end. And the reason why, because it's absolutely absurd that these dolls are being radio controlled and have been reprogrammed by the babies to attack the guards. And it is so absurd that even Kathleen Turner's character calls out that this is absolutely absurd. And that's why I liked it, because even she realizes in character, like, this is absolutely insane that these dolls are stopping her minions from getting to the babies. It's absolutely stupid and strange. And that's the, I mean, I was like, okay, the dolls are going to stop them now. But even she says, like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, you're right. This is ridiculous. And that's when I wrote it down as a like, because even in the movie, their character realizes just how screwed up this is. I mean, it makes no sense that they could reprogram the dolls or that these dolls would be effective in any way in stopping her forces. But there it is.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, Paul.
It's the absurd element. I mean, it's stupid, but it's the utter absurdity, which I'm marking as the like.
Oh, no, I understand. I just that my dislike's going to be related.
Okay, fair enough.
There's something related to that, yeah, I'll have to get to later. Yeah, but that scene is certainly absurd. They mobilize, like, all of these creatures. I think at one point they have the robotic goose following and, like, attacking henchmen.
Yeah, the goose,
yeah, like, all the babies get assigned a different robotic animal, too. Because, like, they have... So this was good because it was actually a Chekhov's robotic menagerie. They set it up in the first act, and they did fire it in the third.
Right.
Because they let all the kids into Joy World, and when they show off the features of Joy World, one of the features is that there is a robotic zoo. And there's even a point where, like, another adult asks Kathleen Turner, why a robotic zoo? Why not just get real animals? And she's like, because real animals, anyone can get. These cost more.
Yeah.
And so, like, they've put that deliberately out there, and then in the end, they deploy the robotic animals and they give all the babies a remote control for a specific animal to control. But my favorite point of the absurdity in that scene is that Sly, who is like controlling the big things that aren't remote controlled by babies in the supercomputer center, rewires them apparently by pushing a button on a computer.
Right.
Yeah,
and like he's like, now to rewire them, and I'm like, that's not how that works.
Yeah,
if that's how it worked, I mean,
push button programming.
Yeah,
but yes. So I agree that the absurdity is ridiculous. However, would you like to hear my third like?
Third like,
go for it, Julie.
My third like is that the triplets who played the baby Sly and Wit. Like, most of the babies in this are played by twins, and that all basically goes down to how much time you can make a child work on a movie set at a time. And so, like, with real young kids, it's usually they'll get twins so that they can switch them off because they can only be on screen for, like, 45 minutes at a time. They can only work for that long at a time. And that way you can actually switch them out and get more work done in a day. But for those two, since there were two of them, two characters, they made them triplets as the actors. And those triplets have gone on to play hockey.
Yes.
So they're now playing college hockey for Bemidji State University.
Yay!
And I love the fact that they, like, all three of them are playing hockey for the same college hockey team.
That's the Minnesotan way. I mean, you wind up with families and brothers on the same hockey team, so that doesn't surprise me at all. I didn't realize that they had done this. Excellent.
Yeah, they are apparently all forwards.
Yeah, and they play on the Grizzlies?
They did. That was Victoria, British Columbia, the Grizzlies. But then that was last year or the year before, and now they've moved on to college, and they are playing college hockey at Bemidji State.
Are the Grizzlies like a minor NHL?
Yeah,
kind of thing?
A minor league hockey team in British Columbia.
But, okay, so I don't know enough about hockey, so I don't know
they're not an NHL team; they're a minor league team. But Bemidji State is a college team, and you know, you never know.
And the one of the good ones, they often are competitive with the other big schools around here as far as hockey goes.
Yeah, they could be on track to all three end up being forwards for an NHL team.
It's certainly possible.
I think that's what's really weird is how old I am that they're old enough to play college level hockey, because I was a teenager when this movie came out. I'm so fucking old.
Shut up, Sean.
I feel like you just should never ever say that in this podcast, because it's never going to make the rest of us feel good.
Yeah.
We're all old.
I graduated from high school the year before this movie came out.
Oh, 1998. That was a good year.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I feel old.
Out of respect for Paul, I'm not going to mention when I graduated high school.
Oh, Paul. How did you feel, Paul?
Let's use that as a time to jump to Rachel's third like.
So, how about the montage at the end of it?
That's mine too.
I have to knock it off my list now.
This is in a very specific way. For just 1 minute, the montage made me think that it was a memorial for all the young actors for whom this movie destroyed their career. I part of the film and I stopped liking it. Until then, I liked it. I was like, oh my god, who died? Oh my god, all the kids died! Well, better than having watched this is their, you know, like, oh, this is how my career started and ended.
Well.
Like,
it is coded kind of like a memorial, though.
Isn't it? Like,
I mean, the music certainly doesn't help.
Like, with Randy Travis, who makes an appearance in the movie, by the way.
Shush. That is another item on my list, so leave that alone.
Okay. He's singing the God song. What is the song? It's like, oh God, how does that song go? Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, it doesn't matter. Whatever. Yeah, yeah. So that's mine as well, Rachel. Although not for the same reasons. I actually found the montage scene provided me the kinds of silly baby comedy that I had wanted.
Yes.
Because it's just babies being like dorky. Doing baby shit. And that's what I wanted in the movie for the comedy. I just wanted, like, babies being adorable.
So you didn't want babies doing karate?
No! Who fucking wants babies doing karate?
I don't know. Apparently a lot of people, given how well this film did, but they'll save that for another dislike.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, if my choice was babies doing karate versus babies doing sex jokes, I would take the babies doing karate. Any day of
that's
the week.
Fair.
Oh, yeah, any day of the week, for sure.
If those are the two options, but if your options were babies doing karate, babies doing weird sex jokes, or babies being adorable babies, which would you go for?
Adorable babies, anytime.
Well, this is the other thing is, okay, so I did Kung Fu for 10 years, and the youngest kids that we had in the school were like 7 or 8 years old, and I'm sorry, but when they hit 8, watching a little 8-year-old do Kung Fu is the cutest fucking thing in the world. Now, 2 years old, not so much. It's a little weird, but oh my god. Tiny children doing kung fu. Tiny Chinese children doing kung fu. Ovaries just...
What?
It's the cutest thing ever. Just trust me. Just trust me.
What the fuck do your ovaries have to do with that?
You're not a girl. I wouldn't expect you to understand.
No, I couldn't because my ovaries can't go kaboosh.
I've never actually experienced this myself, but what I understand Rachel to be saying is something I've seen a lot of other women express, which is that when they see cute children, they suddenly have this sudden feeling that they need to reproduce.
Yes.
And that is the ovaries going.
Wait, which thankfully quickly passes. As soon as the cute child doing a cute thing is out of sight, you're like, oh, that was weird. I'm glad that went away. But for that moment, you're like, oh, God.
Now it makes sense to me, because the whole ovaries going kavoosh, I didn't understand, but now I get it. Thank you, Julia. I now understand ovary kavooshing. It's good.
All right. Let me find a gift for you while you talk about your whatever like.
Oh, I already went over mine. It was the same thing.
Oh, okay.
So I believe now we're on to...
Third dislike.
Third dislike. Okay.
Go, Paul.
Okay. My third dislike... Children in peril, babies in peril is not funny ever. And there's two scenes in the movie that make me think about this in particular. The first one is when Sly is falling down and he's in the middle of the roadway and these cars are passing by each way. I didn't find that funny or I found that terrifying. Like, good God, the baby could get run over. It's like, I don't want to watch a movie where there's a chance of a baby could get run over. And then when his brother gets kidnapped and gets put into a little body bag, you're like, oh my God, what the hell? I was trying to imagine what kids are going to see this and they're not going to think it's funny. They're going to be terrified. How is this humor in any way, shape, or form? No, it just made me hate the movie even more to see those scenes. I'm sorry.
I totally agree with you, Paul. Like, when that baby was sitting in the middle of the road, I was like, what is this? What has happened? Why?
I mean, it made me think of a different movie. Have any of you ever seen Shoot 'Em Up?
No.
It's a Clive Owen, Monica Bellucci film.
No, I missed it.
It does involve a baby at one point, and at one point, Clive Owen appears to put a baby in the middle of the road, and then what's his name, Paul Giamatti, actually runs it over, and then finds out it's a doll, and he says, "That's sick! How could you do that?" And that's, I was thinking of that when I saw Baby in the Road. I was thinking of Shoot 'Em Up.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
There's something like visceral, I think, in the back of every human's brain that you see a baby in the middle of the road and you just like poop a little. Like, it's just not good.
No, not funny, not cool, not good. Yeah.
No.
I'm raging a lot about this movie. I'm not laughing. I'm raging. This is not healthy.
Yeah, this Paul sounds like me on a Transformers movie.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a good movie. I'm just laughing because I'm tweeting stuff.
Yeah, what is an overa, Sean?
I don't know. I'm drunk. Shut up.
I criticized your spelling on Twitter, Sean. I hope you noticed.
Okay.
Third dislike, Julia.
My third dislike. This is where I get to talk about Dickie and all the problems with Dickie.
Oh, goody.
Or should I call him Ice Pick or perhaps Nose Pick or... I don't even know what all other
Ice
names
are
like, because basically Ruby Dee just calls him all sorts of bad names the whole time. So first he shows up and he's so cute. He's a little punk and he's got pink hair and a little stud collar and his leather jacket. And I'm like, oh, that's adorable. But then it turns out the only reason he's doing that is to try to get them to fire him. Because he doesn't want to work with these babies, I guess. And so every progressive scene, he does something else stupid, including like the completely racist one where he pretends to be Buddhist, I guess.
I thought it was Hare Krishna myself.
Yeah. It's unclear what exactly because he's not wearing the Hare Krishna uniform either. It's... Mm. But he says like Shiva will destroy you all, and then he says like you're older than Buddha. There's just so many wrong things. It's not okay. So he's just awful. And he's the worst caricature of like all the cool things that kids might do when they're expressing themselves in alternative ways. Yeah, it's just horrible. And, like, he keeps getting more and more ludicrous piercings that then people keep pulling on in really painful ways. And everything about him just made me sad. Like, the first frame, I was like, oh, cute punk kid. And then I was like, nope, nope, nope.
Nope, nope.
I don't understand, like, they can't force him to work, right?
I don't know. This movie doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know why you're expecting this movie to make any sense.
Like, that's what it...
Yeah, why is he just quit?
Well, there's the moment at which he says he, like, tenders his resignation, which nobody ever says, ever. But they don't... they just, like, ignore him when he does it. It's... I don't understand. Like, why doesn't he just stop showing up for work?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't claim to understand this.
I just don't understand why he goes... Like, it's clear, like, the Dom DeLuise at one point, like, it basically implies that he's, like, acting out, and they have to kind of, like, set him straight or whatever. But, like, it's just... It never makes any real sense. And I guess it's just because the film itself doesn't make any sense. It just seems like it's an excuse to make fun of various subcultures.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Which, it just... Like, I feel like the better response would have been, like, oh, you came in with pink hair and a neck collar and, like, piercings? All right.
Yeah, but it's never like that. Like, there's even the point where she says, like, to him that Dennis Rodman can dress like trash because he makes lots of points on the court.
Right, he gets,
and,
like,
but, like, it implies that Dennis Rodman dresses like trash. And I'm like, no, I don't think that you're – that's not okay to say.
Well, I think with Dennis Rodman is the type of character who would do things on purpose to mess with his media image.
I would like to note that Dennis Rodman is not a character. He's a person.
Yeah. Dennis Rodman was a real person who dyed his hair a lot of different colors while he was also an NBA player, which, like, fine. I don't think you should make fun of that.
Yeah.
In that particular way. Like, that's just, it's just,
yeah,
like, cruel and mean-spirited. It's not actually funny in any way.
Right, they create this dynamic between her and is it Ruby? I don't remember what her name is.
No, what her actual name is. Like her real life name is Ruby Dee, but I don't know what her character's name was.
We'll just call her Ruby because that's a better name than probably they gave her. But like they mean to have them be kind of like oppositions, but what ends up just happening is it's sort of like an older woman of color ripping on a teenage kid and then him ripping on her in return. And it's just sort of like, why is this supposed to be a positive relationship? Like, it would seem to me that these two characters ripping on each other would be like toxic for children. So you wouldn't want that around your kids. You would want two people who like get along and aren't going to do stupid crap in front of kids. Granted, I'm trying to make sense of this
movie. I don't think you can make any sense of this movie at all.
Yeah.
It might be
but I'm on board with you. I found that really problematic for all kinds of reasons. Yeah. So
no, it's me out super bad.
Yeah. Well, so we jump to you then, Rachel?
So I have to pick a dislike out of my many dislikes. How about the fact that babies know all languages until they learn an actual language, and then they forget all the other ones because genetic memory.
Sounds legit.
I was wondering if you and I were going to get to the science first. Yeah.
There's no science in this.
Science in scare quotes.
Yeah, we don't have cameras, so you can't see me doing my little finger thingy. But yeah. Science.
You do that finger thingy, Paul.
I'm doing the finger thingy.
I know you're doing
thingy. I feel like going off on a long rant about the shitty veneer of sarcasm quotes science would actually honor the sarcasm quotes science too much. So I just want to say that it was such bullshit. I can't even. It made Multiplicity look like a scientifically accurate movie.
Oh, God, help us all. Is that on our torture cinema list, Sean, by any chance?
The Keaton movie?
Yeah.
I do not think it is on there, but it probably
quote, unquote, should be because it is torture.
Okay, well, while you guys are talking, I will put it on the list.
I'm sorry, listeners, if you pick this movie, I guess it's my fault. I can see the daggers coming at me from all over the country now.
I would rather watch Multiplicity than this train wreck, because there is not a big sex joke called Multiplicity.
Fair enough.
Offensive stuff about mentally disabled people. So there you go.
Yeah, that movie's got problems. Did you have more to say about the science, Rachel?
I feel like that would be giving it too much credence. It is below my beneath my notice.
Fair enough. So shall I go to my third then?
Yeah.
Please do.
Okay. I will just say that my third dislike is that this movie was better when it was called Rugrats and played after I got home from school.
No, see, like, that's the thing. This is obviously in a post-Rugrats world. Like, it's made in 1999. The Rugrats had already been out for a few years. It knew that, so it was trying to be that, except it was failing. And it was also trying to be other things. Like, it was like Rugrats, but also Look Who's Talking, but also, like, Austin Powers and I don't know what else. And it was horrible.
Saturday Night Fever.
It was horrible. It was horrible at being any of those things. And it was even worse as all of them.
Right, but all I kept thinking when I watched this was, I just want to watch Rugrats. Where it's just a bunch of talking babies doing, like, you know, baby stuff.
I've never actually seen any Rugrats.
It's on YouTube, like, not legally. But you can go on YouTube and you can watch some episodes. Watch classic Rugrats. Because if you watch the newer Rugrats, they add new characters, which is good because it adds some diversity, but you have to really watch the original Rugrats because it sort of establishes characters. It's before the Pickles has his brother is born. It's before then. And it's wonderful. It's just kids like going through kid stuff. But like having adventures and like it's sort of from their perspective viewing the world and it's all of its craziness. Like imagine if you were a baby, you would view things like climbing to the top of the couch would be like climbing a mountain. that's how the babies view it. It's a wonderful show. It's adorable. It's cute. The kids are wonderful. Almost all of the babies are played by women. I don't know why, but apparently that's just the way it works.
Because women have higher voices and are able to make high-pitched voices more easily than men.
Yep.
That's fair. Yeah. It's a great show. And I just kept thinking all the time, like, this movie could have just been a Rugrats movie. And it would have been good. Because Rugrats was awesome.
Yeah, but you didn't put the Rugrats movie on the Torture Cinema poll, Sean. You put Baby Geniuses on there.
I know, because Rugrats is amazing.
Well, that's all I'm saying. You didn't put Rugrats on the Torture Cinema poll.
You put this POS.
Yeah, I know. I didn't. Well, look, I don't even know if it was me that put it on this list. I'm going to blame Paul.
What?
So, like, I'm going to say that my friend, my devastatingly handsome, dangerously mysterious friend Jeffrey asked me which one of Baby Geniuses we were watching. And I was like, he's like, one or two? And I said, one. And he said, oh, because I've heard two is more painful. And after having watched one with all of the baby sex, I cannot imagine
to be more painful.
How two could be much worse. Like, I don't want to have to watch it, but, like, does it get worse than this?
I've not seen number two. I don't know. I saw this when I was a teenager, and I decided that was enough.
You are not to put number two on the list. If you do, I will hunt you down, and I will pee in your shoes.
I will go to the ice caves and stay the ice caves that Saturday.
You will walk into the ice caves and never...
You're going to make Paul die of hypothermia, Sean.
Way to go, Sean.
If I put Baby Geniuses 2 on this list, Paul will freeze to death, is basically what I've had. This sounds like a request for book reads.
Okay, yeah, like you Paul. Go on Twitter to me, yes. Tell me what you're reading, or Paul will freeze in an ice cave.
Okay. All right, maybe we should jump to Fourth Like.
Fourth Like, okay.
Go for it.
Fourth Like, okay. I know Julia and Rachel will roll their eyes at this one, but she's not hypersexualized, but I've always had a thing for Kim Cattrall, and she's in this movie, and she's hot with glasses.
Oh my God, yes!
I mean, she's not doing that mannequin thing. Thank God, she's not doing the over sexualized Samantha thing from Sex and the City. Thank God.
Her hair is still big.
What's that?
I said her hair is still kind of big.
Yeah, but
so,
you know,
but she's not actually literally a mannequin.
She's not literally a mannequin, exactly.
She's doing kind of the Big Trouble in Little China version, but with babies.
Yes, and she punches out Kathleen Turner.
So yeah.
There you go. I mean, she doesn't have a character arc per se until she does that, and that's only because of this weird reveal at the end, but, you know, hey, Kim Cattrall is on the screen. This can't be too bad. Well, oh, how wrong I was, but, you know.
That is also my like, because as soon as I turned this on, I was like, is this movie from 1999? Because it looks like it's from the 80s. Because Kim Cattrall looks like she looked in Big Trouble in Little China.
There's that 80s weird time travel thing with this movie again.
Yeah. And I will admit that I still had a crush.
Yeah. Not going to lie.
Okay, so I'm not gonna, I was gonna save my Kim Cattrall like for last. It is not about her being cute, cause I did never have a crush on Kim Cattrall. I can see why other people would think she's pretty, but she didn't, like, do it for me. But, in this movie, she has some of the only good lines in the entire movie. So there's the point where the little Carrie is telling Dad what's going on, and she's like, you know, they're gonna move all the babies to a secret lab in Liechtenstein, she says, and he says Liechtenstein, and Kim Cattrall, not actually understanding anything the baby has said, only hears him say Liechtenstein, and she says Liechtenstein, Liechtenstein, which is hilarious. You just listen to her say Liechtenstein over and over again in an outraged voice. But her very shiningest moment is the point where she's in the car with him and they're trying to get to Baby Co to stop Kathleen Turner from stealing all the babies. Yes. And he calls 911 and is like, my sister's, my great aunt stole my baby and changed him for my for his twin, and it happened at the mall yesterday, and she's going to take them to a secret lab in Liechtenstein. And the 911 operator is like, okay, prank call. Which
just tell me where you are.
Spoiler alert, in real life, if you call 911, they send someone to you. It doesn't matter what you call about. I know this for a fact because once my niece, and this was in the 90s, called 911 from my mom's house as a funny joke and told 911 that she saw aliens arriving in our front yard. And you know what happened? They sent the county sheriff over.
Yep.
There was, my niece got into a lot of trouble for that. But like, yeah, the 911 will actually send someone no matter what. However, in this scenario, we have to believe that they won't. And then Kim Cattrall totally swats Baby Co. Because after he hangs up, he's like, they didn't believe me. And she's like, give me the phone. And she's like, 911, you know that Baby Co building? There's a bomb in there and it's going to blow sky high. And then she hangs up and he looks at her like, what the fuck? And she's like, you wanted cops. You got them.
Yeah. Best line in the whole movie.
Yes.
So that was legit the best one of scene. The only times that I actually laughed at this movie.
And a character uses intelligence in this movie because yes, that would totally work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I just wanted to say something about the 911 because I actually used to run 911 on an ambulance. Yes, Julia is absolutely right, and the entire reason that whenever you call 911, they will. You know, unless it is such an obvious crank call that, you know, whatever, they will send someone to your house or at least send a patrol car by, is because they don't want to get sued if your ass gets murdered. Basically.
Makes sense.
That's fair. Yeah, that makes sense.
Just as a note, so please don't crank call 911 because that's what dicks do.
Yeah, like seriously, don't ever do it. I mean, my niece was like 11 at the time, so she kind of, you know, in the way that kids just don't think about the consequences of their actions, did it. But, like, she got into a ton of trouble, and she should have gotten into a ton of trouble, because you should never do that.
No, and never.
Cops like being like, oh, you want me to go put the fear of God into this kid? They like doing that. They will do that for fun. So.
I mean, you shouldn't crank call 911. There's a very obvious reason. You doing that could potentially kill someone.
Yep.
Because they could come to you thinking you're the more urgent case, and then they won't have enough people to send to somebody who's having a heart attack or whatever.
And Sean is precisely right.
Yeah. So don't prank call 911. Skiffy and Fanti show giving life lessons.
Yes.
The more you know.
Oh, God.
Are we doing likes? Yes, we're doing likes.
I think we're on likes. Go for it, Rachel.
We're on likes.
So... I was amused by the fact that the company was named Baby Co.
Awesome.
Nothing else? What about Joy World? Did you like Joy World?
Joy World was also amusing, and I did like the whole, we at Baby Co. believe babies have a language of their own. We love babies.
I love that Kim Cattrall, she gets hives when her aunt lies. And the second she says, I love babies, she's like, itch, 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 itch.
Yes. That was amusing. And that's it. I had a really hard time coming up with any likes for this movie. You have to understand.
No, I completely
understand. I don't think we have any trouble believing that, Rachel.
That's okay.
Sean, it's your turn.
So we're on fourth, right?
Fourth line.
But I already did mine. I did Kim Cattrall.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so it's Paul's final dislike? No, fourth dislike.
Fourth dislike. We're not on the final dislike. But we'll get there.
My fourth dislike. It's a small one because we even go to big ones. But it's like, but it annoyed me because it ties in a little bit to the science thing from Rachel. Ancient and forgotten language of cuneiform?
What?
Oh my god! I know!
I wanted to beat my head against the desk. Like, no, you didn't say that. Language of cuneiform. God, help me.
Oh, that's totally a spoken language, Paul.
Ah!
I'm sorry.
I don't understand what cuneiform is.
Cuneiform is the writing, the first writing that the Phoenicians invented.
No. It was the Sumerians.
Sumerians. Yeah, sorry about that. But it's a writing system, specifically a writing system.
One of the first two writing systems known in the world, the other one being Egyptian hieroglyphics, and it's very similar in some respects.
So like cuneiform, that they would make it with rushes, and it would sort of have little slashes in clay.
In clay, yeah.
Yeah, which looks nothing like what they showed me in the film. I just Googled it. That's not what they had in the film. What they had in the film was kids doing squiggly lines.
Yeah, and they say the ancient and forgotten language of cuneiform. Yeah, no. No, we weren't able to translate. Even if they meant Sumerian, then we've translated that because that's how we know about the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Well, anytime somebody says the like ancient and forgotten language, well, if it's forgotten, we can't talk about it.
I think these scientists would get along very well with Jennifer Lopez's professor character from The Boy Next Door, who was very happy to receive a first edition Iliad.
Oh God, I heard about that. Exactly.
I saw previews for that movie and I just decided no. We're talking about the same one, right?
I really love your mom's cookies.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that movie sounds so creepy in not a fun way.
It sounds ridiculous. Apparently he gives her a first edition of the Iliad.
Yes, because every high school boy totally has enough money lying around to buy a first edition of the Iliad.
There's even no such thing, because the Iliad was transmitted in a spoken form for hundreds of years before it was ever written down.
Yep.
Now if he had given her a bought cuneiform tablet that had part of the Epic of Gilgamesh on it, I could buy that.
Although she'd be like, I can't accept this. This is a first edition. And he would be like,
no, you're
it's
giving
cool.
me some JC flashbacks. No!
Okay, so shall we move on?
Yeah, go for it, Julie.
All right. My fourth dislike is how much stupid slapstick there was in this movie. There was just a lot of really stupid slapstick, which involved mostly Sly kicking people in the balls somehow. But it was just annoying and dumb, and I hated it.
Yeah, I have marked down, wait, Bart Baby martial arts?
Good. Yeah, like all these babies. The first scene where Sly breaks out, and then it's like, I'm like, okay, so apparently in this movie, babies aren't just geniuses, they also have super strength. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're coordinated despite the fact that their brains are not wired in such a way that they can be physically coordinated. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, aside from that, even if you suspend your disbelief, it just wasn't fun to watch.
No, yeah, it's like
there was the whole scene with the iron and the skis, which like where they go through it twice, and
yeah,
I think the second time you're supposed to even think it's funnier than the first time because you know what's coming. So like the baby is standing at the top of the staircase and there's a guy there and he comes in and he's like, you think I'm stupid and I'm going to stand over this ski and then you're going to be able to step on it and hit me in the gonads. And he's like, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to step around it. And then the baby throws an iron at his head. So then he steps aside to dodge the iron, finds himself standing over the ski, and whoop, baby hits him in the gonads of the ski. And then this happens a second time. And it's not funny either time.
No, it's not.
It's just dumb.
It's low, 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 low rent Home Alone.
It is like clearly trying to be Home Alone style slapstick, but it does not work.
Yeah, I mean, I actually am one of those people that I was of the right age when Home Alone came out, and I found it very funny, and I still do. This was not even Home Alone. which is a low bar to surpass.
Yeah, I was the right age for Home Alone. I remember really enjoying that when I saw it in the theater. This was not that.
Yeah, Home Alone is a classic. This is the opposite.
Well, if nothing else, like, it was actually very genuinely clever, the stuff that they had him doing, as opposed to, I'm going to jump on a ski and hit you in the balls.
Yeah.
Right, because they're real traps in the movie.
Yeah, and like a lot of what made it work was watching him set it up and watching the ingenuity. And this just did not have that.
No ingenuity, yeah. Just quack shots, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, for babies that are supposed to be geniuses, his setups are really remarkably simplistic.
Yeah.
In a way that's just not funny, yeah. He's a genius, and all he does is he throws irons at people's heads, and then they hop over, and then he jumps on the ski into their balls. By the way, one of those guys was... I was the only one that thought that one of the henchmen looked like Forrest Gump.
No.
I didn't.
Okay, so you...
I didn't notice that.
I kept thinking, like, what the fuck is Forrest Gump doing in this movie? Because the second henchman looks like Forrest. And he even talks like him. He's got a little bit of that southern drawl. It's hilarious. It's not one of my likes, though.
Better not be, or we'll have a talk.
So does that mean we're on Rachel now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So remember how I said that the montage at the end was one of my likes?
Yeah.
Then it became one of my dislikes. Because it was literally just padding out an already insanely boring and awful movie and rehashing every fucking scene of this fucking movie to a ballad. Why?
Not just any ballad.
See, this is another place where I think if you just played the Twin Peaks theme song over it, it would have been measurably improved.
I agree. But, I mean, basically, the movie is not that long of a movie, and I was sitting there the whole time going, like, is it over yet? I want to go to bed. And it wasn't even that late. I wanted to go to bed early because the movie was so boring. It was terrible.
There was a point when I was watching this where I was like, it's super, super late. Like, I was like, maybe we should order a pizza, but I'm pretty sure no pizza places will be open because it's so late at night. And then I looked at the clock, and it was 7:45.
Because the movie feels like the pacing is so bad. It feels like it's hours long, and it's not.
It's an hour and a half and change.
Yeah. It's like a little over 90 minutes, which is not that long as far as movies go. But it's kind of like, you know, so I'll bring it back to 50 Shades of Grey, hilariously enough. Like, that movie, its biggest sin is that it was fucking boring. Like, not even that much fucking, just boring. And this movie, also boring, where it's like, it's not even that long.
It just commits the sin of being boring. Hello?
Yeah, Rachel?
We lost Rachel.
We lost Rachel.
She raged so hard she dropped. Skype dropped her.
Oh, there
she's
you
stuck.
Are.
What?
Lost you for a second.
We lost
you. Dropped
you.
Out.
Oh, I never lost you guys. I see how it is. No. So basically, I'm just saying, like, you know, 90 to 100 minutes is not that long as feature movies go, feature length movies go. It's just this movie and 50 Shades of Grey, which is just like it in the respect that it's really fucking boring. Not in any other respects, thank God. But it's so boring that it feels like it's like 7 hours long, and it's not. It's not even that long. It's just so boring.
So if you had to watch one of these movies over again, which one would you choose?
50 Shades of Grey.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So this is the thing. Like, actually, also, if you gave me the choice between 50 Shades of Grey and Transformers 4, I'd watch 50 Shades of Grey. And that's because 50 Shades of Grey actually does qualitatively feel shorter. And then you can also view it as like a fucked up, like, super long Criminal Minds episode.
Wow.
And you could just sit there and be like, keep a little tally sheet of how often, like, Jamie Dornan's right eye bulges. Like, we're supposed to be looking at, like, all sexy, and instead his right eye is bigger than his left eye. Yeah, that's basically. So you can have fun with it. Unlike this movie.
Fair enough. I guess I should go. Can I go to?
Like, what, are you? Butts.
Are you okay?
What?
You're like cutting out. You're like having a fit. Are you all right?
I'm okay. No, I'm just saying that. Okay, the other thing that 50 Shades of Grey has is it has butts, and this movie would only have baby butts, and that's just wrong because I'm not like perverted scriptwriter of this movie.
Oh, God. I'm glad it did not have any butts in it, because baby butts in this context would be the worst thing ever.
No, it would be bad. No. It'd
be very bad.
That's hilarious. Okay, so I should go to mine.
Yes.
My second to last like.
Dislike.
Look, we're on a number. I don't remember.
Fourth dislike.
I have to say that I despise the Randy Travis ballad at the end. And I just want to explain why by reading some of the lyrics for y'all, which are, you know, these are classic. I mean, these are really some of the best song lyrics that any country music star that was relevant at that time wrote. And if I could stop my cat from attacking me, I will read them to you.
Your cat's trying to save us.
Your cat's trying to save us. So it says, when you were born there in your mother's arms, an angel told me always you will be a gift of love from God to me. You gotta get the rhyme. It's really important. So that's the first stanza. Though your road is long, I'll be right by your side. Through changes you'll see, always you will be a gift of love from God to me. Love took flight the day you came into my life. There's magic in the way I feel. Hearts opened wide, gazing into your eyes. I'll be there for you as long as I am alive. I've never loved more than I love you. A gift for free. Always you will be a gift of love from God to me.
I don't understand how this just suddenly turned into a rap.
Because I'm not going to sing it.
Sean doesn't do ballad.
I don't know. You want me to, like, I could sing, you know, like, when you were born.
No, just stop. Stop immediately.
There we go.
If someone pull out a guitar, we'll do this. It's just that it's a painful song. Like, it's, I like the montage at the end, but then, like, having to listen to Randy Travis just sing this just horrible song. And it felt weird. Like, why are we singing this song about babies giggling? Like, why isn't the song like, you know, like the theme song from the movie, like a little bit of upbeat, like, composition of some kind? Or, oh, I don't know. It just seemed, it's just weird. Yeah. I don't like this movie.
It would be better if it was like, you know, it should have been a song kind of along the lines of maybe You Got a Friend in Me. That'd be like, would have been a better one.
Right? Like, that would have been a perfect song. Except that I think that song...
And then you could have had the donkey from Shrek, and he could have kicked a soccer ball, and we'd be full circle.
Right, and then Tony Danza would have come in, and he and Donkey would have started a football game. I want Tony Danza to do that movie so much.
I don't even know if we had that conversation before or after we started recording.
I don't remember.
So there's a chance that the listeners are just going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Tony Danza and a donkey playing football. That's all you got to know. All right, Paul, bring us home to the fifth like.
I have to come up with a fifth like, don't I? Okay, I like the set design of the baby command room inside of the 25th level beneath Baby Co. I like that dramatic sort of like situation war room sort of thing that they have the baby sitting on that glowing table. I kind of like the set design of that. I also like the general concept, the Resident Evil like idea that their Baby Co has to have a secret laboratory 25 stories below ground. Not one, not five, not 10, but 25. Why? I don't know, but I was put in the mind of Resident Evil, and I was hoping that Alice would show up at some point, because that'd be more interesting than watching these babies do anything, but no such luck. But yeah, I like the design of that little command situation room where we see the babies sitting on there. The nice dramatic dark lighting, dark in the background, and the lighted table they're sitting on, and hatching their little plans and talking and whatnot. 25 stories below ground. 25 Resident stories, Evil. Sean. Yes.
Resident Evil.
It's Resident Evil. And that makes so much sense that these babies are evil, are working for the Umbrella Corporation secretly. They're moles for Umbrella inside a baby coat. See, I've now redeemed this movie.
They're zombie babies.
No, they have to be zombies. They're just working for Umbrella, which makes sense because since they're under the age of shoes, they remember their past lives, so they're obviously working for Umbrella. Yeah.
Whoa. Dude, you just totally broke my brain.
Good. That's my job.
All right,
I know, but come on. I had to come up with a fifth like. Anyway, I could.
I think that's going to be all of us. So, Julia, what about you?
So, my fifth like is Randy Travis. Song at the end. Not the song at the end.
Okay.
But he is actually an actor in this movie. He's one of the people who works in the secret part of Baby Co. And there's one point when he appears on screen with a bunch of people, and Moss and I both looked at each other and we said, "Is that Randy Travis?" And then we both realized at the same time that it was, and that we had worked out that it was, because we recognized his voice and him, I guess, but mostly his voice, from when he appeared on Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Because there's like an ongoing thing on Sabrina the Teenage Witch where her aunts will just like zap celebrities to hang out with them. And, so they zap in Randy Travis and like keep him at their house for a few days at a time. And there's one episode where they just keep bringing him back. And he's like, can I go home now? My wife does wonder where I keep popping off to. Oh. And they're like, no, you have to have some Scrabble and hot chocolate now.
That's evil.
Yeah, like the fact that we recognized Randy Travis and like both realized it was Randy Travis and also realized that the reason we knew this was because of Sabrina the Teenage Witch made me happy, because I actually like Sabrina the Teenage Witch and I hate this movie, but it reminded me of something I actually like. The other thing is that at the end, when it was that song that was playing, I was like, is this Randy Travis? It must be, because I recognize his voice from how he sounds on Sabrina when he talks. And then I was right. It was. And then I read the Wikipedia article on Randy Travis and I got sad.
Why did you get sad?
Is he dead?
No, he's not dead. But like he seems to have had a troubled life.
Aww.
But he recently had a stroke, so he's recovering from that now. Previously, he had been arrested for DUI a couple of times, and it's not terribly pretty.
Damn it. I always thought of him as holding up the good old town values.
Yeah, that was his country and then later gospel persona.
Aww. Well, aww. Like these babies, even he can be ruined by this movie.
This movie is a kiss of death.
Or was
it's,
he?
It's did, true, because his last straight country album was released in 1999, and after that, he switched to gospel.
Damn.
It's like this movie did it to him.
Well, honestly, if you had to have been in this movie, I feel like it would ruin any career.
Except for Kim Cattrall.
Except for Kim Cattrall, but that's because she went on to do Sex in the City.
Yeah.
I don't think she's worked with
it
babies ever since.
It did not ruin Dickie's career. He was in a bunch of stuff afterwards.
Yeah, but he played stoners.
He got work.
I mean, I guess. Well, all right. Fair enough. Rachel, would you like to go next?
So the final like I have written down, this is the last one, so I can't come up with any more, is... I really like Christopher Lloyd's exaggerated growl. That's all I got.
I think we're going to need a demonstration.
Oh, I couldn't possibly. I don't.
Oh, don't you know? You can do it.
Wait, that sounded way weird, faux Minnesotan there, Sean.
It's Sarah Palin.
Christopher Lloyd being Christopher Lloyd. He sounded like, I felt in this movie, he sounded more like Uncle Fester than anything else, which I have fond movies of, or movies, very fond memories of the Addams Family movies.
Okay, so if you can't do his growl, then maybe say something in Klingon.
Kapla?
There you go. Good enough.
Okay.
I don't know if that's actually really Klingon. You could have just made some weird noises and I would have accepted it.
But I actually know Kapla, so there you go.
Can you do Shakespeare's To Be or Not to Be in Klingon?
Oh, God. Isn't it like Takba, Takme, or something like that?
You're asking me?
I have no
fucking clue.
I don't know how to say anything in Klingon, but I do vividly remember that when I was a freshman in college and I was taking ancient Greek, one of my classmates, Jorge Cisneros, who had learned to speak English primarily by watching Star Trek, said, sometimes you really wish you had the Klingon suffix to make it all clearer.
And oh, good God.
My Greek teacher was like, would you care to elaborate, Mr. Cisneros? And he said, yes. It's like this. He said with a laugh. Or he said with a laugh, ta. And as if that would make it completely clear to the rest of us, which was one of my fondest memories of that time.
It's great. I wish I could speak Klingon. That would be wonderful.
So yes, all I know of Klingon is the Klingon suffix is ta, apparently.
Yes. But there you go.
Yeah.
Takpa, takbe. So there you go, Sean.
To be or not to be?
Yeah.
That is the question. Whether just
well, no, that's just to be or not to be. So
okay.
You can go ahead, Mr. Not a Trekkie.
I'm not a Trekkie. I like Star Trek, but I'm not a Trekkie.
Yeah, like, I enjoy Star Trek. I just don't know Klingon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know Klingon.
Do you know Mandalorian?
Do you?
No.
Okay.
Yes.
But I don't think that determines whether or not I am a Star Wars fan. So I rest my case, I win.
Your logic is terrible. That is most illogical.
Today I saw a picture of a donut with the One Ring writing on it.
I saw that yesterday. Or was it the other
Ooh,
day?
Ooh, Paul beats me.
Yeah, I even retweeted it like that. This is awesome. Why can't they get these? That's right, because donuts aren't really too many good donut shops in Minnesota. Alas, we have no Dunkin' Donuts. We only have a few donut places worth the name. You'd think in Minnesota you'd have good donuts, but no. I can only think of one decent donut shop, and that's way down in Uptown and nowhere near me. But I
you know
digress.
What's sad? We are finding all kinds of things to talk about other than the things that'll let us finish this fucking movie.
None of us want to talk about this movie, but we should finish that. So,
I'm going to get all Trekkie sad about Leonard Nimoy, so I think you should go, Sean.
Oh. Okay, fair enough. My last like is, you know, other than some of the scientific weirdness of it, I do like the idea of babies having a language that adults don't understand, even if it's just nonsensical how it's set up. But it seems to me that given that we are language creatures, like babies would have to have something.
Well, this is actually something that appears in the Mary Poppins books.
Oh.
So like the Mary Poppins books by P.L. Travers talk about how babies do have their own language, and they do forget it when they start to become more grown up and lose their baby talk and start talking like people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they like rip that concept directly from Mary Poppins.
Those sons of bitches.
I can also tie in a classic science fiction story to this movie. Have any of you ever read the C.L. Moore and Henry Kuttner story, Mimsy Where the Boar Grows?
Oh, yeah.
This movie is clearly stealing from that, because in that story, for those listeners who haven't read it, and you should, that the idea that at a young enough age, you can be a child can be rewired to see reality and perceive things in a completely different way. And this movie's kind of playing with that a little. And there's even lines about babies are not human, and a fetus is far less human. And as we were talking about Mary Poppins, like, oh yeah, Mimsy with the bar grows. That they totally stole some ideas from that. It's like, yes, children can be intelligent in a different way, and there's the whole thing that at too late of an age, the reprogramming that they find in that box of stuff doesn't work, because they mentioned that Alice in Wonderland was too old to go to the other world, but the two protagonists in the story weren't too old. And they were able
to... Is that
to,
the thing they turned into a movie?
Yeah,
they turned it into
the
a
last
crappy
Mimsy.
Yeah. Don't forget the fucking movie. read the story.
Maybe make us watch that movie for torture cinema and get Paul to rage again.
Oh, God.
Oh, well, guess what's going on the list right now.
Rage that all night long.
Rage against the dying of the light.
But
in Mary Poppins, there is like actually a whole big thing about Mary Poppins understands the language of babies and can talk to them. And this is part of what makes her a really good nanny. But also like there's this wistfulness for the fact that they will lose it, and that like as they are aware that they're losing it, they kind of feel sad about it.
All right, well, I think that is time for our final dislike.
Okay.
Our final dislike.
The final dislike.
All right, go, Paul.
Okay, we've touched on it before, but the horribly used CGI on the little people that tried it in some of the quote unquote acting for the children and the talking of the children is just horrible and bad. And it's just icing on the cake. I mean, I got by just not even looking at their mouths as they were talking. And that didn't even work because what was coming out was so offensive and in so many cases, but yeah, just trying to watch them talk and watch these clearly non-babies running around and doing stuff in some place in cases, just with this CGI around one of the little people. It's just like, no, it's just bad special effects. And it was just the cherry on top of this sundae that was full of fecal matter. So that's it.
If I never see a baby doing Saturday Night Fever again,
It'll be too soon. Yep. Exactly.
That scene is just creepy weird.
I really don't understand why a baby raised in a secret lab would leave the lab in favor of going to a mall where he would be by himself. And apparently also the mall sells a bunch of really weird ass baby outfits, like a 70s disco suit.
I know Baby Guess was a thing, but I can't imagine a Baby Guess would ever have a baby Saturday Night Fever outfit ever.
No.
It's another one of those instances when the jokes are, they're jokes that adults get, but kids don't. Like, I don't know a kid who would have been like 8 years old in 1999 who would have been like, oh yeah, Saturday Night Fever, I get that joke. Like, the reference just falls flat, right? It's just weird. It's just a creepy, weird scene. And then, of course, it's like really bad CGI and it's a dancing baby. And dancing babies are only cute when they're doing baby dance. Not when they're doing, like, you know, John Travolta dance or, like, you know, Michael Jackson dance or whatever dance they might be doing. It's cute when it's baby dance.
All right, so is it time for my final dislike?
I think so, Julia.
Okay. My final dislike is that this film made 3 times its budget back in the box office. It cost $12 million to make, and it made $36.5 million in box office sales. It was the 10th highest grossing PG movie of 1999, so a lot of people went to see it. It was also the most hated film of 1999 by Roger Ebert. And it has a 2% on Rotten Tomatoes, But because it made $36.5 million in box office sales, that's why there was a sequel.
I just want you to think about this. Given today's international market, this film would probably make even more than that.
That's scary.
Yeah. It's pretty horrifying.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Because I don't even know where it played, but it only made $9 million internationally, so it couldn't have played very many places.
But it made $36.5 million in the box office.
That's insane. How much were movie tickets in 1999?
Less than they are now.
I want to say that was back in the day of like the $5 matinee.
You're right.
Less. No, it was like $3.
That was back when movie tickets was starting to hit $10 for the first time in New York, in Manhattan, and there was a big to-do about that.
The average ticket price, according to Box Office Mojo, in 1999 was $5.08. That's the average, so obviously depending where you live, there could have been different prices. So depending where you were, your matinee could have been closer to $3. And I guess if you were in like NYC or something like that, probably $5 would have been your matinee. Yeah.
Yep.
That means a shit ton of people saw this movie.
Yeah.
Millions.
Yep.
Millions saw this movie.
Yep.
Fuck you all. You bastards. Because now there are going to be other baby genius damn movies we're going to probably have to watch.
Please, I think, God, that no. You're the only one who's going to watch those, because I think Paul will freeze to death in an ice cave rather than doing that. And Rachel will not do it, and I'm pretty sure I won't do it either. So that's just going to be you.
Nope.
Talking to yourself.
We can't have that either.
Okay,
I feel like
right.
One time you make a baby sex joke and then you've ruined it. We don't watch the rest of your movies ever again.
Nope.
Yeah, baby sex, just not funny.
Mm-mm, never.
Nope.
There are a few things where you can say, like, categorically, it's never, ever funny.
That is one of them.
Yeah, never funny.
So not funny.
Yeah, there aren't very many things that are not funny, like, in any, ever. And I think baby sex is one of them. It's just not funny. It's not funny.
Never.
Who are we on for our last dislike?
Last dislike.
Oh, I have so many to choose from. Well, gosh. Should it be that the beginning has the most clumsy expository summary ever? Or should it
be
that...
Oh, my God. Okay. Why would Christopher Lloyd ask the computer to tell him the history?
Why? It was like...
Info dumping.
No, Bob. It was worse. It doesn't even deserve an as you know, Bob.
It doesn't make any sense in the context of the film. He is in the facility. Why does he, like, the only reason it's there is to tell the audience information
so
we don't know.
So, listeners who have not seen this movie, please never see this movie. What you may not understand we're talking about is that in the beginning of this movie, Christopher Lloyd, who is Kathleen Turner's right-hand man, who has come up with the Kinder Method and works with Baby Co., so knows exactly what they're experimenting on and the whole history of it, turns on a computer and has the computer run through an expository spiel about what Baby Co. is and what the history of it is and what babies they're experimenting on and why.
And explains to him what the Kinder Method is. Like, it's just, please explain to me the thing that I programmed into you.
On the other hand, Rachel, while that was going on, we didn't see Sly do any stupid sexual baby jokes or any other painful things. We just got a lump of exposition, which was sometimes in some cases more palatable than the rest of the movie.
I mean, what I love is that I was in the middle of asking a rhetorical question and you guys interrupted me because I was like, which is worse, the worst expository summary ever? Or the Baby Co. mascot being the creepiest fucking thing in the entire world.
No.
Oh, no. Or the fact that that's apparently stolen from Kim Cattrall's husband.
Yes.
Okay. So that's where I have to...
And it is stolen! Who the fuck thought that up?
She's like, that's from chapter 2 of your book. And I'm like, wait, you actually think that looks good?
So this is my last dislike. I'm just going to get it out of the way. So for those that don't quite understand what we're talking about, when Elena, Auntie Elena, Great Aunt Elena, opens up Joy World, one of the things that she's invented is a series of robotic people things, including clowns, and one of them is the creepiest giant baby that has ever existed in the history of mankind, and it's a robot baby, and it runs around wanting to get hugs and then burps and farts and shit like that, and it is by far the creepiest thing I think this film has on offer. There's lots of creepy stuff, but that fucking baby, if I went to Joyland and I saw that baby walking towards me, I would get the fuck out.
It is very Uncanny Valley.
So, like, it reminded me of my friend had a game for the Super Nintendo called Zombies Ate My Neighbors, and one of the levels of Zombies Ate My Neighbors, the antagonist is this giant baby who wanders around with a giant baby bottle that spills milk that apparently will kill you. If you get hit by it. And every time this giant robot baby was on screen, I was like, I feel like this is Zombies Ate My Neighbors come to life. But like the weird thing that was that nobody in the movie acted like it was creepy. Everybody else was like, yeah, cool, giant baby.
I don't think any kids would not be afraid of this. I can't imagine any baby seeing this fucking thing and go, that seems totally normal. I think every under 3-year-old child would like just piss its pants and cry because it's too creepy.
Yeah, what's the? I don't get the appeal of giant baby. I just don't.
Who gets the appeal of giant baby? It eats way too much food and it shits everywhere. What could possibly be appealing about a giant baby?
I'm just going to say, listeners, don't ever watch this movie, but do a Google image search on the phrase baby geniuses giant baby, and you will see the terrifying thing we're talking about, because we're not talking about how terrifying it actually is.
And the way it talks, because it's the people in like the control center give it a voice, but instead of making it have a baby voice, it's like, I am evil baby, and it's like just creepy. I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking. They were on something.
It also has like the most creepy, sinister, uncanny valley face ever.
Yeah.
It's super creeps.
So Rachel, was that actually your fifth dislike? I mean, did you have another one to throw out there?
Yes, I do. I would like to know how they cannot outrun a fucking baby, because babies have tiny, stubby little legs. And are not known for running that fast. I mean, they can go, but they still have tiny, stubby little legs. And I would like to note the clumsy emphasis on everything being robotic and remotely controlled, because this totally won't come up at all at the end of the movie in a way that I just did not even give a shit about. Or perhaps just the fact that the dialogue and the voice acting are so bad. What a combo. And that's all my dislikes.
I will add that the
big ones. The big ones.
The big ones. I will also add that I don't understand how this Baby Co. Corporation can hide a 25-level facility underneath the ground that nobody seems suspicious of.
Yeah. Because they have so much money from all their baby products they sell.
Well, for that matter, I don't really understand the business proposition of getting a grant or a loan to add another wing to the non-Baby Co. Baby Research Center and then being paid $900 per baby that somehow would increase their earnings by a factor of 4.
Yeah, the math doesn't work.
Look, man. I have nothing.
Math is tough.
I got nothing.
Like, they took out a $50,000 loan. I gather they were going to then be able to take on a few more babies, which would give them $900 per baby.
Right. So they get more per baby, so they get more overall, and so they have better net profits. At least that's the bullshit explanation.
No, I don't think it works at all.
No, it definitely doesn't. Well, I think we've gone through everybody.
Can we grade this thing now?
What about you, Sean?
Oh, I already did. I have a fucking creepy baby monster.
Oh, okay.
Robot.
He's a baby monster.
I mean, I could add I don't understand why Forrest Gump is in the movie. I mentioned that giant baby is creepy. Basil confused me because at one point he says that Kinder's evil, and then at another point he's surprised when Kinder's evil. That was weird.
Basil actually has a quote unquote character arc because he goes from being unskeptical of Baby Co to joining the baby team against Baby Co. So he actually
but only
has
kinda.
Only kinda. I know it's lame, but everything in this movie is just about lame. So
the other thing I would mention is the absurd logic of baby disguises. When Sly first enters the real world, for reasons I don't quite understand, he wanders around the city and nobody seems bothered by a baby wandering around in the city in the middle of the night and like walking through the roads and almost getting hit by cars. But the second he dresses up like a 1920s homeless man with a cigar, that's when everyone notices him.
And then people are like, hey, that's a baby with that cigar.
And the homeless guy kidnapping him scene. Oh, God.
Oh, my God. No, oh, my God. I had blocked that out. Why? Why?
Why did that need to exist? And then, of course, he punches him and he falls in a toilet. So, you know.
Yeah.
Normal.
This movie's full of awesomely badness.
Absolutely. So, I think this is a good time for us to start grading this. So, Paul, we'll start with you. Your grade of this film, sir.
Okay. Let me preface this grade with an editorial note. The worst movies I've ever graded on Torture Cinema are the following: Birdemic, the Star Wars Xmas Holiday Special, Ernest Saves Christmas, Inspector Gadget, and Transformers 2: Revenge of the Fallen. I would watch any of these five movies again, overseeing this piece of shit called Baby Geniuses one more time. Therefore, I am giving this an F double minus, my lowest grade ever for Torture Cinema. How about that?
Yay.
Wow.
Oh, Paul hates this movie so much. It's wonderful.
Incandescent hatred.
Julia, it is your turn.
I hated this movie almost as much as I hate the Transformers franchise. I'm maybe as much. I'm not sure. But the point where Kim Cattrall did the 911 thing was one actual moment of like. So that makes me just give it a solid F minus.
F minus it is.
Not an F double minus, just an F minus.
We don't have a double minus. There's just F minus.
Oh, okay.
That's as low as you can go.
That's as low as I can go.
Well, this movie gets it, along with Transformers.
F minus isn't technically even a grade, but we invented it just for this.
We've done F minuses before on this show, the Star Wars Holiday Special. But okay.
But F minuses don't actually exist in the real grading world.
True. Okay. So
F minus is really the worst you could possibly give a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what this movie gets.
Fair enough. Rachel?
So, I already said that I would rather watch 50 Shades of Grey again than this movie. And considering that I also said that I would rather watch 50 Shades of Grey than Transformers 4, that means that this movie is as bad as Transformers 4. And about as creepy. Which is... Well, so this is the thing, is it's actually slightly less creepy than 50 Shades of Grey, but there are less hot Jamie Dornan butts. So, 50 Shades of Grey gets an F, so this movie gets an F minus.
Wait, you think that this is less creepy than 50 Shades of Grey, even with the baby sex?
No. So 50 Shades of Grey is a little more creepy, just because the entire plot is about a stalker.
Right, but there are no babies who have, like, sex jokes.
Yeah, but I think it's mostly that the sex jokes are, like, limited to discrete scenes as opposed to the entire concept of the movie being a stalker acquiring a woman and slowly destroying her identity as an independent human being.
There's something more insidious about that.
Yeah, and that it's being sold as romantic. Though, I mean, you know, to the credit of the makers of 50 Shades of Grey, they actually make it less creepy and rapey than the book. Yeah. So, this one gets an F minus because it's not an F, because 50 Shades of Grey is an F.
So, Sean, are you going to be the lone dissenter, or are you going to give an F minus as well?
Oh, fuck no. I hate this movie. I hate it so much.
So bad.
It's so bad. The fucking carriage scene. Oh, gosh.
Oh, God.
That fucking scene. Like, that alone was the moment at which I was like, did he seriously just tell her to take off her clothes? And she did, and it was not even a question. Like, what the fuck is going on in this universe?
Like, not that- only did she do it, she said, I really think you should have bought me dinner first. Ugh.
Tell me.
Who the fuck says that?
Please don't bring my mind to that.
So, yeah, so I'm giving it an F minus because, quite honestly, there was no joy in this movie, and I just feel bad for pretty much anyone in this movie. I feel especially bad for the babies because I feel like of all the people involved, they're the ones that didn't have a choice because they're babies.
To be fair, those triplets are playing hockey at Bemidji State.
So it clearly has not affected
them. So it hasn't necessarily ruined their lives.
That is fair.
Well, thanks to Jen giving the Star Wars Holiday Special a D-, this movie is officially the worst reviewed movie in the history of torture cinema.
And deservedly so, because quite honestly, if you gave me the Holiday Special or this, I would watch the Holiday Special.
Special in a second.
That's why I tried to give this an F double minus, because, yeah.
No, this gets a solid F minus. It is fucking awful. Don't watch it. I mean, like, they're...
A thousand times Grandpa's Wookiee porn.
Oh, my gosh.
A thousand times that over this movie.
Because I'm just, like, fascinated. How does cross-species Wookiee sex work?
we already discussed that one.
All right, so we all agree this movie gets an F minus, so I guess that means we're done?
Yeah, we're done. So if for folks listening in, there'll be a new poll probably before this goes up, but just keep an eye out in case it doesn't go before this to vote for the next movie for next month. So on that note, I think we're done. We're great. So thanks, Paul, for joining me to talk about this movie, unfortunately.
Stay frosty.
Oh,
thank you, Julia.
Paul, I'm sorry you came home early from the ice cave to watch this.
Well, that's sort of life, you know.
And thank you, Rachel.
Remember, I'd still rather watch 50 Shades of Grey.
And on that note, awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
Fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
This is Ripley. Last survivor of the Nostromo. Signing off.